Almighty and merciful God, from whom comes all counsel, wisdom, and understanding, we humbly ask you to guide and assist us in our deliberations and in our work. May all our efforts be directed to the welfare and good of our community and our country. May we act honorably in pursuit of true justice for all our people, now and for the future, and for generations still to come. Amen.
Meeting of Parliament, Thursday, 18th of July, 2013. Oath of Allegiance of the Minister for Financial Services and Gaming, the Honourable Albert Joseph Eaton. Confirmation of minutes. The minutes of the last meeting of Parliament, which was held on the 20th. 24th of the 5th and 27th of June 2013.
May I find the minutes of it?
Three communications from the chair, four petitions, five announcements, six cases to be laid. The Honourable Recusant.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the annual account of the Gibraltar Government for the year ended the 31st of March 2012, the annual report of the Gibraltar Regulatory Authority for the year ended the 31st of March 2013, the Import Duty Franchise Regulations Amendment No. 2 Regulations of 2013, the Import Duty Integrated Tariff Amendment No. 5 Regulations of 2013, a review by the Principal Auditor on the payments made by Government to SP Butchers Limited, and a review by the Principal Auditor of the payments made by Government to the OEM Group of Companies and Haymaid Gibraltar Limited.
Order to lie.
The Honourable Minister of Education for Communications and Justice.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the annual report of the Gibraltar Prison Board for the year ended 31st December 2012, and the annual report of the Gibraltar Police Authority for the year ended 31st March 2013.
Order to lie.
I have the honour to report that in accordance with Standing Order 12-3, the report of the Principal Auditor
on the annual account for the government of Gibraltar for the year ended 31st of March 2012 has been submitted to Parliament, and I now rule that it has been laid on the table. I have the honour to report that in accordance with Standing Order 12.3, the Ombudsman's annual report for the year ended 31st of December 2012 has been submitted to Parliament, and I now rule that it has been laid on the table. The Honourable Leader of the Opposition.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Gentleman mentioned two reports from the Principal Editor. Are these two reports in question subsumed within the annual account of the Principal Editor, or are we going to obtain copies now? Because we don't have one. We don't have copies of all two reports on this side of the House. Mr. Speaker, I understand that they are the ones being circulated now by the Lady Usher. Seven, report of committee. Eight, answers to oral questions. Question 515 of 2013, the Honourable D.J. Athena.
Can the Minister for Tourism advise who attended the ITB fair in Berlin, what the cost of such attendance was to the government of ITB, and what the result of such attendance was?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Commercial Affairs, Public Transport and the Port.
Mr. Speaker, 20 people of Gibraltar House in London and Stuart Finlayson of the Gibraltar Tourist Board attend the ITB fair in Berlin, Germany, on the 6th and the 7th of March of this year. Germany is the largest European outbound travel market. This was a fact-finding mission for the 2nd of the service, investigating the possibility of exhibiting at ITB in the future. The visit was also aimed at establishing contact with German PR companies with a view to attracting city break tourism from Germany to Gibraltar. Proposals have been received and these are being considered, as is attendance at this trade fair. The details of the cost to the GTB on the attendance are outlined in the schedule. I hand over to the Honourable Gentleman.
So, once I get to a copy of the schedule, the Honourable Minister has mentioned the potential that Germany has for outbound tourism. And indeed, he made a similar statement during the course of his budget contribution, where he said that Germany in particular is a country holding great potential in outbound tourism for Gibraltar. Can I ask him how he's come to that conclusion and whether any market research has been carried out by the GTB? Because, of course, he also says in his budget address and also in his reply was given to the House that the 2nd from Gibraltar and the GTB went on a fact-finding mission. So I just wanted to marry those two issues together and find out whether any prior market research had been carried out by his department before sending these two individuals to Berlin.
Mr. Speaker, in respect of the first part of the Honourable Gentleman's question, asking the number of Germans that travel abroad on holiday, what is the research that we've been able to obtain from different sources? It's not an empirical study that we want to take forward, or the Walter Hansen number has carried out. We've been able to rely on research and studies conducted by other people. We do know from those studies and from that research that Germany is the largest outbound tourist market, as I said in the answer to the question. The reason why we've attended as a service is primarily because of cost. To attend the ITB fair is not a cheap or a low cost exercise, so we have to evaluate whether attendance and marketing at a particular fair is cost effective. As you know, that is one of the main points on which we conduct our marketing and attendance at any of these fairs. And secondly, in order to establish content, we understand again from the contact we've had so far that 80% of the outbound tourism from Germany is conducted by German tour operators. In other words, in order to be able to crack into that market, Gibraltar needs to be able to sell ourselves by the tour operators in Germany. So we've established contact with two of them to see how best you can sell Gibraltar to them. And that was the purpose mainly of the attendance as a service at the ITB fair in Berlin.
Peter, can you just confirm that the results of the attendance of the contact release that has been made in relation to 2 weeks to your operations, is that the totality of the results of the attendance?
Mr. Speaker, there were various objectives achieved. The first was to establish contact with, as I said in the original answer to the question, PR companies. These PR companies will be able to advise us how to best approach target the German market. And then we had two additional meetings with the representatives of local travel marketing companies that have a specialty in promoting Germany in small countries such as Jersey. And these are the people that we met, the tourist board and the Walter House in London, which we know is doing a lot of work for the GTB in terms of promoting water as a super great destination, how best to be able to sell the water in Germany. There are also additional meetings with, for instance, a particular travel organization that we met in Brazil this year in Madrid. In fact, two tour that we met in Madrid. There are also at the ITB fair in Berlin, and further discussions were also held with them.
Question 516, the Honourable G.J. Asuna.
Can the Minister for Tourism provide details of how the GTB is pursuing niche markets?
I'll serve the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Commercial Affairs, Public Transport and the Port.
Mr. Speaker, the niche market sector of the tourism industry is wide and varied. At present, the Gibraltar Tourist Board is pursuing the following activities: event-led tourism. This is actively being pursued in partnership with the Ministry of Culture. As this house knows, events such as the Gibraltar International Jazz Festival and the Ivanko International Literary Festival have been established, to name but a few, giving visitors an incentive to come to Gibraltar for these events. The markets will not only cover the cultural aspects of Gibraltar's product, and also sporting events. Bird walking. As detailed in my budget address, an initiative was taken by the Grand Group earlier this year to invite journalists and tour operators in this field to visit Gibraltar. The event was supported and endorsed by the Gibraltar Tourist Board. It is hoped that this will generate more interest in this particular activity. The GTB has also advertised in the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds magazine this year, and has met with experts in the field locally, and has already engaged specialists in the tour organising aspects of this market. MICE market. As also detailed in our budget address, the GTB formed part of the Meet and Talk Forum, which was held in Gibraltar and organised by the Grand Group. The forum brought together top agencies and meeting planners from the United Kingdom and Europe, specialising in the MICE market, or the Meetings, Incentives, Conferencing and Events market. GTB is also in the process of launching a new meeting folder with participation by the local industry. As
the Honourable Gentleman knows, this year is due to be exhibited for the first time at the IMEX Trade Fair in Frankfurt. This event is specifically aimed at the night market. Gibraltar is ideally placed to host small to medium-sized events in this category, and it is vital that G2B supports local industry partners in pursuit of this market, the weddings market. The G2B has now set up a weddings committee, which will meet regularly so that all those selling this product can work together to improve all the services on offer. The G2B continues to advertise in weddings publications in the UK. The administrative process for marriages and the marriage procedure is currently being reviewed by the Ministry and the G2B to see if any improvements can be made. Diving is another important area for expansion, and the Ministry for the Environment is working initially on the regulatory aspect of this market before we can develop further in terms of tourism. The Rock also, Mr. Speaker, is ideally placed as a base and a gateway to some of the most important golf courses in mainland Europe, of course, referring to Spain. We are keen to attract more visitors to Gibraltar in this respect and are actually working on this in conjunction with a potential tour operator based in Spain. New tours. As the Honourable Gentleman will have already had me say on various occasions, the G2B have explored new tours and brought these to fruition, such as wine tasting, another event at the Garrison Library, two at the Mayor's Parlour, and are now actively considering even more options with industry partners. In many of these activities, the G2B has also encouraged all its industry partners to enter into joint marketing activities to promote the expansion of these markets.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Minister for his very full and comprehensive reply, and I'm sure from this side of the House that I would congratulate him for setting up all these potential avenues to develop the new market. And it's funding that for the second growth, and congratulations for doing so. And we're certainly very keen to see the future of that over the next, three and a bit years of the life of this Parliament. The one point for you just to hone in, and the reason why I asked this question is because, firstly, and I know he's conflated both issues in his reply, the beginning of his reply, when he refers to events-led tourism and elite markets. He nevertheless, during the course of his budget address, separates both ways to market. And in relation to the niche market, he only mentioned, made a reference to bird watching. So I'm glad to hear that there is, in fact, much more than just that particular niche market which has been pursued. But in relation to bird watching, he refers in his budget speech in the following terms, because in particular, bird watching is of significance. And I would ask him, in what way does his department think that bird watching is of significance in this area? And indeed, if I can just add what the measure is of this conclusion.
Well, I can understand that the Honourable Minister for Tourism says that I clearly interested in coming to Gibraltar to see the birds. And frankly, surprised perhaps he might clarify the matter. Why should we be interested in coming to see the mines?
Mr. Speaker, I suppose that was obviously the Minister will answer, but I think we certainly have understood.
I think on this occasion the Speaker should be allowed to take a supplementary question as well.
It's not, it wasn't a reference to the rodent.
In respect of the first question asked by the Honourable Gentleman of bird watching, this is one of those times that where somebody else is answering for me, of course, and it's to the Honourable Gentleman to the right. The reality is that the fact the bird watchers that I have met and I have come to support have always told me of the spectacular sight of the devotee is for this phenomenon, and the fact that when they were considering an enthusiastic bird watching where to go, Gibraltar was one of the places that they themselves thought of at first as being at the crossroads of the world, but had not been able to find adequate literature or promotion of it on websites, etc. This is why I say the answer to the question that we have been contacted with one particular local travel operator in Gibraltar who invited certain people over so that Gibraltar could be promoted serve as a bird watching center. There is a lot more work, I think, that has to be done here, because, of course, Gibraltar is known for certain things, but not necessarily for bird watching. And yet, bird watching, in my view, and certainly I think in the view of the Honourable Minister for Environment, could be one of the main touristic platforms by which Gibraltar could be sold. And, of course, whereas the GTB is not in the business of selling tours, it is certainly in the business of promoting those parts of Gibraltar which lend themselves to tourism, and bird watching is one of them. And this is why we try it with, in this particular case, then, and why we supported the invitation of journalists and other tourists from across the globe to come to Gibraltar and see how bird watching could be conducted in Gibraltar. In respect to the question of the honourable speaker,
I will allow the honourable minister to get away with having to answer that question.
Question 517, the Honourable DJ Pacini.
So this is his answer to question number 85 of 2013. Can the Minister for Tourism state how many further meetings of the UK GTA have been held, together with the dates and locations of such meetings, who the attendees were, to include details of who ordinarily attends such meetings, but failed to do so?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Commercial Affairs, Public Transport and the Port.
Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Gentleman knows, there have been two meetings of the UK GTA since question number 85 of 2013. A meeting was held on the 20th of February of this year at the Cotswold Hotel in Birmingham, UK, on the same day a tourism roadshow being held at this location. Another meeting was held on the 6th of June of this year at the Walter House in London, also coinciding with a tourism roadshow held on that same day in London. I now hand over to the Honourable Gentleman, a schedule for the detail of those who were invited to attend the meetings and those who sent apologies. The detail of who ordinarily attends these meetings was answered in question 85 of this year.
Speaker, as I await the delivery of the schedule, simply to point out to him that I wasn't aware, in fact, that there had been a UK GTA in the meeting on the 6th of June, no surprise. And no doubt it was the only one he thinks that I was aware. I'm just briefly looking at his reply, and in February, and as a reference to the meeting on the 20th of February. The other point I'd just like him to clarify is he said that in an answer which he provided in the February to my question 85, he said that he stated who ordinarily attends but fails to attend. I don't see that from my reading of the February, but that is in fact the case, and maybe you can lead me in the right direction in that poll as well.
Mr. Speaker, the reason why I tell the Honourable Gentleman that I know that he knows when there have been meetings in the UK GTA, is because I know from Secretary of the House that he is a passionate and avid reader of my first statement, and I refer him to first to the 397 of this year, which mentions the latest UK GTA, and also number 110 of this year, the 21st of February, which also sets out the date of the UK GTA. In respect of the second question he asked me, what I said in my original answer was that the detail of those who ordinarily attend the meeting was answered in question 85 of 2013. But in any event, if he cared to look at the schedule which I hand over to him now, he would see many questions given the answer again. I set out who attended and who sent apologies. So he would be able to.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, that's the extent of the information that I received back in February. Where I'm an avid reader and also the press releases is something that we can put to one side for the purposes of my question. but simply to point out that I missed on that particular test, and it's been a particularly, excuse me, sir, it's been a particularly busy couple of months. Mr. Speaker, there's one, and I wonder if you can assuage any concerns that I certainly have from this side of the House. Just to predicate this question on this bit of intelligence which I've received from his predecessor, Bar One, and that is that I'm told that UK-GPA meetings, and it's important to emphasize the letter of the UK, were attended by, on average, 10 to 12 people within the UK tourism sector. The worrying trend and the concern that I have arising from that worrying trend, as far as I can see it from the answers that he's given after this house, is that both in April, June, October, and now the two meetings that we've had in the course of 2013, the average seems to be of sort of outside attendees, from the UK, seems to be in the region of between 4 and 5. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, the UK GPA meeting, which was held on the 26th of June in London, had 0 attendees. So we had a UK GPA meeting held in London, and this is kind of clarified by the different team. I know who's speaking for him. It seemed odd that all the attendees there were Gibraltar attendees. But can I just assuage any concerns that I may have? There seems to be a depletion from what the position was when you were in government to what the position appears to be now.
Mr. Speaker, in respect to the purpose to his question to me that we could leave to one side, whether or not he's an avid or passionate reader in my statements, he only needs to consider the Hansard in the state of every section of the House. So not only does the honourable gentleman refer me to my press release, but he in fact decided me when I don't issue a press release and he finds out intelligent on the street that there's been some observer status or some attendant at a fair. And he asked me questions, and he started to his question by saying, the honourable gentleman has not issued a press release. So he's a passionate reader friendly on my press release, and he knows the honourable gentleman thinks I should be issued. In respect of the concern that he has with the House to be able to persuade him to his full satisfaction, let me tell him that in respect of the UK GPA of the 20th of February, there were 6 attendees in the UK. On the 6th of June, there were 3. And in respect of this particular UK GPA, and I remember that I told the honourable gentleman that we had a road trip to promote the London catchment area from UK London Airport Gibraltar, that was the best attended UK roadshow ever. So if he had any concerns, he did not have any concerns because, as I told him then, the event was so popular and was so oversubscribed that we had to turn some travel agents away.
Steve, I'm just somewhat concerned with my honourable friend, the honourable member, it's obviously my friend, but once again, the first few friends on the opposite side of the House on that basis, the Honourable Minister, that maybe, given that there's been a minor reshuffle, we should make representation to the leader of the party and leader of the government, the Chief Minister, and seek an alternative position in government. Because clearly, his adversarial and combative style, which is suited to his time and his practice as a barrister, is not suited to the position that he currently holds as the Minister of Tourism. He seems to be has the ability to find a political controversy in the most innocuous and, I think, least political questions which I've heard. But putting that preamble to one side, Mr. Speaker, can I ask him a specific point? In the apology section which he's given to me in relation to the previous meeting, in all of them during the course of 2012, Mr. Albert Borges, who is the UK representative, as we all know, is cited as providing an apology for being unable to attend. Whilst he then sort of disappears in the other schedule, unless he's been in touch indeed, but I think he is. So can you ask why that's the case? Talk about it in 2025, see why that's the case.
Mr. Speaker, contrary to my honourable friend, I have absolutely no hesitation in calling him my honourable friend.
It's always been the convention of the House that we are all parliamentarians and therefore friends, and I have no stake in calling you that, notwithstanding my alleged combative style in this Parliament. Mr. Speaker, the honourable gentleman, if he were to have any degree, and now I shall be combative, any degree of political credibility, he cannot start a question by prefacing it by saying, in order to persuade my concern, he already puts me in a defensive position, because he's already suggesting, implicitly in that statement, or preface to the question, that I've done something that's not quite right. So he should forgive me that I should adopt this position when he prefaces the question in the way that he does. Working to ask a perfectly objective question in an open manner, could he say why, rather than the implicit statements within that question which he makes? So the honourable gentleman should not presume to be mostly wounded by the way that I answer his questions when he prefaces them the way that he does. Why Mr. Boyer does not attend meetings of the UK GTA in 2012, I'm afraid that I have not yet inquired or sought to inquire why people do not attend the meetings, and I have not sought to inquire why Mr. Boyer did not attend in 2012. But I can tell the honourable gentleman that whenever you are asking me in the house, I shall ask him. He misses the point completely. What are the issue that I'm raising is not as to why Mr. Boyer has been unable to attend, The point is that he's listed as an apology in the apology section, but he no longer doesn't feature in the 2013 schedule. That's the only point I'm raising, and I'm afraid that the honourable minister, despite this bluster, hasn't answered the question. Can you please answer the question?
The speaker for the honourable gentleman who becomes the upset of the way that I've answered his question. I'm just trying to say for being combative, really, it is the twilight zone that comes over in this chamber. The reason why Mr. Borgia may have appeared as having provided apologies in 2012 was, as a matter of fact, I think because it's not a time. Why he doesn't appear now as an apology can only be because I am speculating. There was a conversation with him in respect of the tourism matters that may have been assisting Mr. Kinesha, and now he does no tourism matters at all. Those are dealt with exclusively from my work with Mr. Kinesha by Mr. Kinesha, and they may have between them decided that there was no need for them to attend all UK GTA sessions. I'm speculating. The answer is the truth is I do not know.
That's an answer. That's an answer, but I would ask the minister to find out rather than base his answer in speculation, because he doesn't know, I would ask him to find out the true facts and to go to that.
Mr. Speaker, I would be delighted to answer the questions at this time given notice.
Question 518, the Honourable S.M. Together.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable the Minister for Transport say whether he is now in a position to tell the House whether the government has developed options for an alternative runway crossing for public service vehicles during peak time, and if so, what options it has or is considering?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Tourism, Commercial Affairs, Public Transport and the Port.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the position remains the same as set out in my answer to question 217 of May of this year.
Speaker, is the Honourable Minister able to indicate whether this is a matter that the government considers something it needs to give any attention to, either in the current context or in the context of future plans for tunnel under the runway and trying to alleviate the difficulties of public transport vehicles encounter every day?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, simply to tell the Honourable Gentleman that because I'm not able to give any specifics does not mean that the government is not dealing with the matter and considering its options. What I said in the answer to my question is that it remains the same. In other words, that the matter is being actively considered. I am doing so with the Honourable Chief Minister. We just do not have at this particular juncture the ability to provide him with a particular specific plan because we have not been able to finalise that. It's not that we're not actively looking and meeting and discussing it.
And just one final complimentary, Mr. Speaker, and I'm grateful for the Minister's intervention in this respect. Am I to take from the Honourable Member's answers this morning that there are, in fact, options, that the realistic options that are being looked at as a possibility for the future?
That is correct, Mr. Speaker.
Question 524, the Honourable Mrs. Ida McGill-Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Health say if he is satisfied with progress on the interior of the new mental health facility at the former Ironman site and advise what the dimensions of the different bedrooms for patients are and whether they have ensuite bathrooms or just sinks in the rooms?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Health and Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I can confirm that I am satisfied with the progress to date on the interior of the new mental health facility. The accommodation provides a number of habitable rooms, 16 rooms, 20 single rooms specifically designed for the relative care provided on each floor, such as for patients with enduring mental illness, rehab, and a psychiatric intensive care unit, stroke acute. At the outset, bedrooms did not provide on-street facilities or individual wash and basins. As the scheme developed, it has been possible to develop and include a high-dependency on-street room on the rehabilitation wing. Also, three high-dependency rooms in the acute ward now have an on-street WC with wash and basin. The length and width are provided as per the schedule that I will now hand over and have been designed respecting the existing cultural heritage of the building. So, there's no information in the schedule.
Question 525, the Honourable Mrs. Ina Lohan-Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Social Services say what reports have been submitted from schools looked after children attend on the following issues, broken down by number, whether first, middle or secondary school, and per term for the academic year 2012-2013-4? A. Habitual inappropriate uniform. B. Habitual lack of an adequate set lunch. C. Habitual antisocial behaviour towards other children. And D. Habitual antisocial behaviour towards teachers.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Quality, Social Services and the Elderly.
Mr. Speaker, the following reports have been received from schools, reference lack on the following issues for the academic year 2012-2013. A. None. B. None. C. None. D. None.
Question 526. The Honourable S. N. Segal.
Mr. Speaker, when the Honourable the Minister for Traffic provides details to the staff of the cost of securing the services of a qualified professional CTC instructor to carry out the relevant courses for bus and lorry drivers.
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
the request of securing the services of a qualified professional CPC instructor to carry out the CPC periodic training courses for bus and road drivers in accordance with Directive 2003/59/EC is as follows. Course 1, which is run between, on the week between 25th of February and the 1st of March, a cost of £3,017.60. Course 2, which ran between the 15th of April and the 19th of April 2015, was £2,281.05. Course 3, which ran between the 28th of May and the 1st of June 2013, was £3,551.25. And the fourth course, which is run on the first between the 1st of July and the 5th of July 2013, was a cost of £2,623. The final course, which is the one I just mentioned, is course number 4. Flights to July have paid to the invoice, it's not the final figure.
I'm grateful to the Honourable Minister for the answer. Can he say at what stage or how soon it is anticipated that a local instructor will be qualified in order to be able to deliver these courses?
Mr. Speaker, at present, I'm not going to be able to say when, and if you haven't, but it is the intention of government to obviously train someone locally to be able to run the course so that we don't have to forego this course.
And Mr. Speaker, can the Minister say whether someone is already training locally for
Mr. Speaker, not at present. I'd like to raise awareness to the gentleman because this has to be done in a rush, so to speak, because this was a directive which commenced on the 9th of December 2013, in a couple of months' time. Provision was not made, when it was meant to have been made, but to ensure that persons could be trained for the state, because this course requires that the CPC is actually 5 modules that need to be completed in a given period of time. So we have to cram these courses to ensure that our drivers locally can be up to date by the time the directive and comes into effect on the 9th of September 2013. As the first course is carried out and underway and our drivers are qualified, then it will be obviously it will be 1 course per year, which will be the only way, as opposed to having cram 5, as has been the case because of lack of oversight operations.
So is it then the government's intention that by the time the 1 annual course is in place post September this year, that there will be a locally qualified instructor to deliver this system?
Speaker, as I said earlier, we will entail and train someone, and for as long as I feel it's necessary for that person to be up to date in all the issues related to the court, so I'm not able to provide those information at the moment.
Question 527, the Honourable SNP Lord.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Minister for Traffic tell this House how long the government expects the new parking facilities in and around the naval grounds, as well as in the area of the former site of the Royal Gibraltar Yacht Club, are planned to be available to the public?
I'll say the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question today with question 527, 513.
Question 528.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Minister for Traffic provide details to this House of the cost to government of providing additional car parking facilities in the Naval Ground area and the former site of the Royal Sports Yacht Club and the surrounding area?
I'll show the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the public continues to have access to parts of the area around the naval grounds and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future.
the area of the ex-road devotee car park will be available for use as from today at 11 a.m. The works to convert this site into a car park have just been completed, and therefore it is not possible to provide an exact contract sum pending the agreement of the final accounts. The anticipated cost is, however, expected to be in the order of £500,000. This figure excludes the cost of works not directly related to constructing the car park, such as road realignment. No works are presently being undertaken in the naval ground area to provide additional car parking facilities. These works are related to preparations for the annual fair.
Mr. Speaker, in relation to the naval ground, I was referring to the laying of tarmac in the area where the Mackie used to be, where the crossing originally used to be towards the Kingsway from Reclamation Road, where parking has been provided. Though I understand that parking is provided for residents of the Regal House, of former Regal House site. Is that correct?
Mr. Speaker, the area there is still being used, and in fact, it is being used to decant vehicles in the Allen Memories, as I said, it's legally and legally parking in the area used to be engineered lanes before the traffic was built.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Minister has told us that as far as the area of the naval ground are concerned, that the public will continue to have access to that area for the foreseeable future. I know that it's not definitive by any means of how long that will be, but he makes no mention of how long the new car park that is opening today at 11 a.m. Will be available to the public as well. Is he able to shed any further light on those two matters?
The car park that is opening today will be open for as long as I mean, it's a permanent parking space. I will find you, and again, plans may change in the future, but as things stand at the moment, it's a permanent parking.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Minister for trying to assist, but the point I'm alluding to is that in the manifesto, the government committed to providing double the number of car parking spaces that there were in the now site of the Commonwealth Park that is currently being built. The reason why I ask how long that the new facility that has opened today at 11 o'clock or will open today is going to be available is in the grand scheme of the digital puzzle that is talked about regularly in this house that is to book in terms of planning and anything to locate various different things. I'm trying to understand whether it is in the government's contemplation that is a temporary parking space in the context of any new developments in the area which are intended during the remainder of the life of this parliament.
Speaking in the grand context of things, that is a big plot of land, and as far as we're at the moment, it's indefinite. I mean, that could change in the future, in the bigger context of things that we are on the ground right these days.
So in other words,
it will remain a car park for as long as there is no offer in relation to that plot of land for development by somebody, for example, in the private sector that's acceptable to the government. That's one supplementary. And two, is the government actively looking to perhaps receive potential offers of investment in relation to that plot of land, which, as the Honourable Member has rightly pointed out, is a flat, premium piece of land in virtually in the central town.
Let me see, the answer to both questions is yes. The second question, it's an ongoing for a long time, it's concerning the environment and the interest in the plot of the matter of materials. So we want it to be something new to me, a part of the evidence.
Question 529, the Honourable S. Ben Figueroa.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Minister for Traffic now say when he expects to receive a report of the findings and recommendations of the Sustainable Traffic and Transport Survey recently conducted in Gibraltar?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, the situation has not changed since the reply given in answer to question 318 of 2013. The first draft of the Sustainable Traffic Transport and Parking Plan is still expected to be completed in late 2013 for internal review. It is expected that the final version of the plan will be ready during the first quarter of 2014. Next question.
Question 530, the Honourable S.N. Figueroa.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Minister for Traffic provide the staff with a breakdown of all expenses totaling £25,000 incurred in respect to the traffic, transport, and parking plan survey as set out in the estimates book?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, I now hand the Honourable Member a breakdown of expenditure incurred to date in respect of the traffic, transport and parking plan survey. The Honourable Member will note that the total expenditure to date is close to £24,000, exactly £23,917.18. This represents costs incurred in respect of the household survey exercised together with sundry costs in relation to the survey generally. The original estimate of £35,000 actually provided for an element of staff overtime costs in relation to the survey. However, Mr. Speaker, as it is considered more appropriate to account for overtime costs under the Department's provision for payroll costs rather than under other charges, all such overtime costs will be charged to a new overtime subhead under H32 Technical Services. Overtime costs on the survey are now estimated to be around £25,000, and the overall estimated cost of the survey has therefore been revised to around £50,000.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Member say whether the total overtime cost of £25,000, I think he referred to in his answer a moment ago, includes the time spent not just in the household service but in respect of the survey that was conducted on Gibraltar Road a month ago?
Mr. Speaker, the actual survey conducted started, if I recall correctly, at around 7 o'clock in the morning and it finished at around 7:30 in the evening. Hence, overtime was incurred on viewing and the actual survey arose that it would include those as well.
Question 531, the Honourable E.J. Ray.
Mr. Speaker, further to question number 472 of 2013, can the Minister for Housing say by when government hopes to have CCTV and the garage barriers fully functional at Mid-Harbour District?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, my government is broken. Have issued a request for quotations for the supply and installation of a CCTV system at Mid-Harbour Housing Estate. The present date is the 2nd of August 2013. With regard to the garage barriers, this is at design stage. Once the process has been completed, the Ministry for Housing will be in a position to provide further information on both these issues. This is obviously because the Minister for Housing is a date by which he intends to, or he hopes to have a quotation for CCTV, then one can accept that nothing might be said further until the 2nd of August. But the garage barriers are in design stage and so on. So the Minister at least has some early
more flexible date by when the barriers should be functioning at the mid-harbour state. Mr. Speaker, the barriers will definitely not be functioning before a CCTV system is in operation. At the moment, it is impossible for me to provide the Honourable Gentleman with an estimate. I mean, I think it will happen as soon as possible. Mr. Speaker, let me understand a little bit further. Why is it absolutely necessary to have CCTV before the barriers are functional? I believe in other states there are barriers without necessarily having a CCTV, so perhaps there's some information there that could help, you know, not only myself, but mainly the residents of the other states to understand why it is necessary to have one in place before the other. Mr. Speaker, by ensuring that the CCTV cameras are there, it would be possible to actually monitor the use of the barriers. It is clear that if the barriers go up before the CCTV cameras are in operation, the risk that there could be damage or so forth to barriers would be expensive. So once the surveillance is there and the barriers can be monitored, then the government will proceed with restoring said barriers.
Mr. Speaker. Can the Honourable the Minister perhaps help me with this? This CCTV or intended CCTV system, will this be connected to the CCTV system that is currently in place at various points in Gibraltar that we commenced when we were in government, and indeed it was finished by the Honourable Minister for Justice when they were elected in 2011? Which is then connected to the control room at Newmall Police Station, or is this separate to that?
Okay, the Honourable Member mentioned that it is actually the Ministry for Justice, the Ministry for Justice that is leading on this project, but what I can say is that the cameras will be connected to the police control room at Newmall House.
And if it is going to be connected to Newmall Police Station, will there be the need for any infrastructure work? Because the way that this was done in 2011 and 2012, before you could set up CCTV cameras, you had to lay the fibre optic cable to enable the CCTV cameras to then be linked to the Newmall Police Station. That may require some major infrastructural work that will then impact on the actual timing and the amount of time that it will take for CCTV cameras to be installed. Can the Honourable Minister perhaps help me with that?
Mr. Speaker, the extent of the Ministry for Housing's involvement in the CCTV cameras was because this estate is a government estate, is the liaison and the links between the Town Association and the Royal Gibraltar Police and the Ministry for Justice. Hence, perhaps I'm not in the best position to be able to answer that question. Obviously, if, again, I do not be able to answer the question, which is just ask the Ministry for Justice.
Question 532, the Honourable E.J. Lee.
Can the Minister for Housing provide updated details in respect of expenditure incurred since the answer to question number 474 of 2014 in respect of contracts awarded for making empty homes suitable for reallocation, stating how many contractors were engaged, to whom payments were made, the number of residential homes involved, and indicating if the services contracted were for repairs or cleaning.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, I will now hand the Honourable Member a schedule containing the information requested. I'll just mention that all services contracted were for repairs.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Last month, after the question session, I had a word with the minister, sort of clarify some things, since I tend to repeat this question, if not every month, every other month. On the second, Mr. Speaker, the information provided list, the contractors, broken down by date and the number of properties. Those number of properties, am I right in assuming the number of properties to which each contractor was engaged? But what is the overall total number of properties? You know, because if we take, for example, the first two or the first three listed there, one property, are they all referring to the same property or the different properties? So what I'm missing is the grand total number of properties. So if you refer to fixing, you know, two homes, three homes, or 20 homes, how many properties is that were overall referred?
Mr. Speaker, I can't say whether they were for more than one property or not. And I would like to have the to say that, you know, 501, that the property, that both contractors were working on the same property. I wouldn't like to assume I can try to revert to that information and later on if I remember with it.
Yes, please, Mr. Speaker, I would be grateful. The information sent here is useful, but I'm still missing, and this is why we discussed a little bit further the last time. You know, overall, if you just refer to one property, or it could be 10 properties or whatever, I am interested in that grand total number of how many properties were involved.
Mr. Speaker, the question actually asked the number of residential homes involved. We're quite prepared to accept the information later on this afternoon, but if the Honourable Minister were kind enough to go back to his officials and provide us with that information, it would be great.
Mr. Speaker, be pleased to that.
Question 533, the Honourable E.J. Hale.
Can the Minister for Housing provide details in respect of rental homes assigned since the answer to question number 476 of 2013, indicating how many will be repaired by A, the Housing Works Agency, B, subcontractors, and C, the assigned tenants themselves?
I'll answer the Honourable Minister for Traffic, Housing and Technical Services.
Mr. Speaker, since the answer given to question number 476 of 2013, 12 flats have been assigned. The repairs are to be undertaken by the following: the Housing Works Agency, 3, subcontractors, 6, and the assigned tenants themselves, 3.
Question 537, the Honourable S.M. Yeri.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Deputy Minister say whether further to question number 411 of 2013, there has been any progress with the tender for the redevelopment of the old police barracks site and provide this task with peace tenders?
Answer the Honourable the Deputy Minister.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The government continues in discussions with the preferred bidder. A preliminary survey has been carried out.
Mr. Speaker, is the Honourable Deputy Chief Minister able to discuss the nature, or even in very general terms, of what is anticipated for the site?
Mr. Speaker, what they're doing at the moment is a structural survey. It's expected to take a couple of weeks. So once we have the deal, we'll have the results of the survey, then we'll be in a position to know what can be done in the state. But it will be housing. We can come up with housing.
Question 538, the Honourable D.J. Postini.
Can the Deputy Chief Minister explain why there was a contradiction arising of events between the MOD and HMDOD in relation to the incursion of Gibraltar airspace by Spanish aircraft as alleged by the government?
Answer the Honourable Deputy Chief Minister.
Well, yes, Mr. Speaker. The government version of events was based on at least two eyewitness accounts who observed the Spanish aircraft flying over the water. We cannot answer for the MOD in response.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable, the Deputy Chief Minister, can rest assured that certainly on this side of the House we take a very serious view of any incursion of our airspace, particularly because it raises issues of sovereignty, but in this case, it seems potentially to also raise issues of safety, of aircraft safety. I think there was a VA flight which was stopped from taking off for about 12 to 18 minutes and was left on the Dubuque Airport trauma. But this incursion is, of course, particularly acute because it was perpetrated by Spanish military assets. Now, there is a concern on this side of the House that there should be such a divergent account of events between what the Dubuque government has said in the press statement and what the MOD has said in the press statement. The Gibraltar government came out with its press release on the day of the, not on the day of the incursion, I think it was the day after the incursion, where it said that four Matador aircraft of the Spanish Air Force entered Gibraltar's airspace from the northwest. And indeed, in a quote which is referred to in the Gibraltar Chronicle, a spokesman from Number 6 of course was stating the government of Gibraltar has called in the UK to take up the matter of this military incursion into the airspace of Gibraltar at the highest diplomatic and military levels. And the concern on this side of the House is that the MOD, on the other hand, and I know appreciative of the Honourable Mr. Minister can answer as to why the MOD has come up with a completely different analysis of events, where it says very clearly that there is no evidence to suggest that the aircraft flew into Gibraltar airspace. And I asked the Honourable Deputy Minister whether he had made any inquiries as to why there is this divergence of a report in respect of a matter which is indeed very, very serious.
Mr. Speaker, the government takes a very serious view of this incident, and we welcome the support of the Honourable Member in that respect. But this is not the first time it's happened, and the dealings with the Spanish helicopters and aircraft over a number of years. But I'd like to tell the member that there are sensitive and serious issues relating to the definition of airspace in the case of the Gibraltar that I would rather not expand upon across the floor in the past. And perhaps I would be perfectly happy to brief him in private on the matter. But I think once we receive that explanation, we understand the differences of opinion that expressed in the two statements.
Mr. Speaker, certainly on this side of the House, we'll accept the offer of being briefed in relation to this, and we're curious as to how there are two divergent views of the matter. We won't pursue it, I understand, but my Honourable Minister, Mr. Rasheen, has further supplementary questions that we don't have to
this. Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Member, and Mr. Rasheen, we have to have the matter of the United Kingdom, and we're waiting to respond to that respect.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, in fact, my supplementary question is indeed, the press reports are that the government has made very, if I can just read the quote, made a strong representation based on the Gibraltar government's view of events. Indeed, one would have thought that the government would have made it clearer in those terms if we accepted the MOD version of events. But my supplementary question, what was going to be, whether the government has received any response to the protest which it has delivered to Her Majesty's government?
I've already answered that by saying that we're waiting for
it was something that we was discussed at the time and they're waiting for a response. But I think it's not a problem. I'd rather expand it further if one member would share with me. And I think we can certainly have a discussion in private which will throw some light on the inconsistencies which you've been having.
I look forward to the other question.
We will now recess to this afternoon at 3, when we will begin with questions to the Chief Minister. And I will now to say to the Chief Minister.